Hello everyone, this is Betty and I'm reading from the News Gazette on Friday, August 28th. And as usual, we'll start out with the pandemic. Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 64. In Illinois, there are 227,334 cases with 7,977 deaths. And in Champaign County, there are 2,133 cases with 20 deaths. Douglas County has 208 cases with 5 deaths. Ford County has 98 cases with 2 deaths. Piatt County has 76 cases with 0 deaths. And Vermilion has 303 cases with 3 deaths. And Illinois Impact, it says here, Urbana announced that it's extended its emergency order prohibiting large parties to apply to all private residential properties in the city, including single-family homes. This order expires on September 28th. A resident in their 90s is the fifth person in 5 weeks to die of COVID-19 in Douglas County. Due to complications caused by the virus, this individual is hospitalized and died in the last 24 hours, health officials announced. And after a Piatt County nursing home employee tested positive, all patients and staff at the home and Maple Point Supportive Living will now be tested on a weekly basis, Administrator Scott Porter said. And this is information supplied by Jeff D'Alessio. Okay, the title of this article on the front page says, Keep Getting Tested, Local Experts Advise. And this is by Deborah Pressey. Local health officials are giving new federal guidance on coronavirus testing a thumbs down and advising everyone to continue getting tested regardless of whether they have symptoms. Asymptomatic people need to be tested, said Vermilion County Health Department Administrator Doug Toole, because that's how we find out where this is in the community. The new guidance released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention this week was a reversal of its earlier position. The federal agency now advises that asymptomatic people don't need to be tested, whether they've been in close contact with someone with COVID-19 or not, unless they're vulnerable to worse effects of the disease or testing is advised by a health provider. The CDC is also now advising that people don't necessarily need to get tested if they've been at a social gathering of 10 people or more without widespread mask wearing or physical distancing, again, unless they're vulnerable or advised to test by a medical provider. Tool called the CDC's new guidance, bad advice. Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride said the CDC's new testing guidance is absolutely not based on any public health science. A major issue she sees with telling asymptomatic people they don't need a test is a potentially broken chain in contact tracing among people who have been exposed and then not tested. She and Toole both said the contacts of those who test positive for COVID-19 will be placed in quarantine for 14 days, whether they are tested or not, to allow time to see if the exposure will result in an infection. But when those contacts are placed in quarantine and aren't tested themselves, it hampers tracing of their own close contacts who could still be out in the community spreading infection, Pride said. You can't put someone in quarantine or isolation without a valid reason to do so. Robust testing among asymptomatic people gives public health a picture of how the virus is spreading in the community, Pride said. And without that testing and the information it provides, there would be more community spread, she said. I can't even imagine this new guidance came out with the CDC logo on it, Pride said. Dr. Robert Healy, Carl's director of medical quality, said Carl plans to follow the guidance of the local health district on testing. Anyone who believes they may have been exposed to COVID-19 should get tested, he advised. Both Carl and Christy Clinic are reserving their COVID-19 testing for people with symptoms and those required to undergo testing prior to a medical procedure. They are referring asymptomatic people to the state's free drive-through testing site at Marketplace Mall. The Illinois Department of Public Health on Thursday reminded everyone to continue being tested, including those exposed to someone who has tested positive. Douglas County Health Department Administrator Amanda Miner said public health can't force people who were exposed to a positive case and placed in quarantine to get tested themselves, but that testing does help with contact tracing efforts. She also said it's important for everyone to understand one point in the CDC's updated guidance that states, a negative test does not mean you will not contract an infection at a later time. Some people continue to misunderstand that a negative test doesn't give them a free pass to move freely in public without taking precautions. Testing is important, but it's also a point-in-time indicator. What people need to do is stay home when they're sick and when they've tested positive. I think we are having a lot of individuals out there not taking this seriously, and the spread has continued, and people are not understanding the effects on the community as a whole. As a mother, Miner said she's especially aware of the impact of the pandemic and canceled activities on younger people who are losing a time of their lives that they won't ever get back, while some people aren't following public health guidelines. If people want to see the pandemic come to an end, they need to wear masks, observe social distancing, wash their hands frequently, and stay home when they're sick, Miner said. If you can't do it for yourself, at least do it for those kids. And see what else we have here on the front page of the News Gazette is a picture of a father and son, George Cook and son Garrett, looking at some signs in the ground. And that's what I thought originally. And it says both George and his son Garrett, both of Champaign, read signs Thursday while participating in the story walk at King Park in Urbana. Garrett's story about his dog Kevin, titled Kevin's Adventures, was posted on a sign at the walk. The event, sponsored by the Urbana Free Library, has seen stories by area residents posted in various parks in the city of Urbana, so people can get out and walk and have something to read. The final event will be from noon to 7 p.m. Monday in Victory Park. Here's another article on the front page, and this is schedules adjusted after 32,000 tests given in 2 days. This is by Ben Zigderman. The University of Illinois is redistributing its testing schedules as it adjusts to thousands of students and employees getting tested twice a week. The U of I administered more than 17,000 tests Monday and more than 15,000 on Tuesday. There was a bit of uneven distribution in testing schedules such that a disproportionate number of people were assigned to a Monday, Thursday, and Tuesday, Friday schedule, which led to record high numbers of tests, said Marty Burke, the chemistry professor leading the U of I's testing and tracing effort. To put this into context, this was 2.6% and 2.4% of all COVID tests run in the U.S. for those 2 days. Students and employees were given a testing schedule based on their answers to a survey, and on Thursday, the U of I sent a mass email encouraging students to switch to a Wednesday-Saturday or Wednesday-Sunday schedule to take advantage of shorter lines when the university is less populated. We are increasing capacity at testing sites for the weekends for your convenience, wrote Mike DiLorenzo, chair of the COVID-19 Executive Steering Committee. Because of the heavy testing Monday and Tuesday, Burke said there was a small delay relative to the typical turnaround times, but most were still delivered pretty fast, and the rest still within the 48-hour window we described. He said the ramp-up in testing should be manageable. We are in the process of redistributing our testing schedules and onboarding a bunch of new robotics in the lab that will help us collectively speed things up even more, even on this scale. Since move-in began August 16th, there have been 535 positive tests, though the number of confirmed cases is lower than that, as some people have tested positive multiple times. Campus spokesman Robin Kaler said the number of cases is within experts' models for how the semester would go. Physicist Nigel Goldenfield and bioengineering professor Sergei Maslov projected that about 200 people would bring COVID-19 with them to campus, but that all of the university's mitigation efforts combined would limit the number infected over the summer to about 700. We're going to have around 200 imports, and then after a period of about 2 to 3 weeks, the effect of those will go away, Goldenfield said last week. That initial bump will be crushed by the shield mitigations, and the shield mitigations is the testing that they're doing, and the outcome will be a safe environment. The local economy will stay open. The university will be able to function. Okay, we have another article on the front page, and this is about the Champaign School District. The title of the article is Black Lives Matter Signs a Topic of Debate, and this is by Anthony Zillis. The big letters plastered inside the large windows facing John Street at Westview Elementary read, "We got this," encouraging words to the community that school would go on successfully this fall. In the corner of one of these windows last week was a much smaller sign also with three words, "Black Lives Matter." Under district orders, that sign has since been removed and has sparked a legal and philosophical debate within the district about the words Black Lives Matter and in what capacity teachers can use those three words. I think the board's legal counsel communicated that the display of a Black Lives Matter sign may be considered prohibited political activity, Superintendent Susan Zolas said. When you post an individual sign with a political view that the district may or may not agree with, you open the door for what the attorney calls permitting limited public political speech, which means you can't exclude anyone's viewpoint. Once you allow one sign, you have to allow all. The controversy arose just 2 months after the school board released a resolution to declare racism is a public health crisis as it adversely impacts our students, families, staff, and community at large. The school board has not met since the issue arose, but the district cited state law and board policy as its reasoning for ordering the sign to be taken down. Under the local governmental Employees Political Rights Act, government employees in Illinois are prohibited from engaging in political activities while at work or on duty. Speaking out on public policy is considered political activity under the Act. Unit 4 School Board Policy 850 similarly prohibits materials supporting political candidates or issues. In a Facebook post, school board member Elizabeth Soteropoulos said that the district as a whole has not made any decision with regards to BLM signs hung up in an outward facing manner. She also said that the board's policy allows teachers to hang the signs inside their rooms if they're not on outward facing windows. "I wish the answer were clear-cut," Soteropoulos said, "and I wish that something so many of us view as obvious were truly so obvious in the eyes of our legal system." Soteropoulos also said that the board was considering a report by the U.S. Office of Special Counsel concerning Black Lives Matter and the Hatch Act that paved the way to allow federal employees to support Black Lives Matter while on the job. It stated that because its origins were issue-focused and weren't based in partisan politics, Black Lives Matter didn't fall under the purview of the law. That report, though, isn't necessarily congruous with Illinois law, and it may open doors that the district would rather leave closed. The Hatch Act does not consider speaking out on public policy a political act. The Office of Special Counsel used similar reasoning to rule that the phrase Tea Party was not prohibited under the Hatch Act when the fiscally conservative movement rose to prominence during the Obama administration. To the extent that either movement's motivating principles can be definitively established, it appears that they both were or are focused primarily on raising awareness of and achieving policy changes for their issues of concern, the report read. Thus, expressing support for or opposition to BLM as a movement is not activity directed toward the success or failure of a political party, partisan political group, or candidate for partisan political office. Such expressions are therefore allowed by the Hatch Act. Similarly, the district's concern would be that allowing teachers to hang a sign that read Black Lives Matter would clear the way for Unit 4 employees to hang signs the district wouldn't want plastered in the windows of its schools. These state laws are there to protect speech we agree with, School Board President Amy Armstrong said. They're there to protect against signs we don't agree with. The strongest argument the board may have, Vice President Giannini Baker said, is if Black Lives Matter is directly tied to curriculum. The simplest argument, though, may not be that hanging a Black Lives Matter sign doesn't necessarily have anything to do with public policy at all. I think that for many, this is an opportunity to express how they feel that their Black students' lives do matter and they want their Black students to know that, Baker said. I think that, much like signs supporting our lesbian, gay, and transgender students, they know that they have someone to talk to. That person is not just there to teach, but to be a person to be an ally in that moment, and I don't know that our Black students have that. Informally, you know what teachers to go to and to talk to, but there's no sign like that. It's a powerful sign. It's one that's not just recognized in Unit 4, but nationally. The board next meets on September 14th when signs reading Black Lives Matter will almost certainly be discussed. For now, the sign at Westview remains down, replacing with other signs honoring Blacks contributing to society and acknowledging the district's anti-racism resolution. I would like to think that in the light of the strategic plan, in the light of rethinking our policies, in the light of our resolution, that we're asking, why not allow this, Baker said. If supporting our Black students is a priority of ours, and this is something that at least, if anything, empowers them and makes them feel like that they belong here, let's start here. Let's figure out where we can go. See, we have in the second section called Our County, and this goes to the headline, Murder Charges Filed in Shooting Outside Liquor Store. And this is by Mary Schenck. A man already in jail for beating a fellow inmate has been charged with a murder for the fatal shooting of a Champaign man earlier this month.
Travoy Fonville, 24 of the 1200 block of Hollycrest Drive, Champaign, was charged Thursday with 8 counts of first-degree murder in the August 15th killing of Christopher B. Kelly. The counts allege both that Fonville was the shooter who caused Mr. Kelly's death and that he was present shooting when Mr. Kelly was hit. Champaign police are looking for others involved in the brutal assassination. If convicted of causing Mr. Kelly's death, Fonville faces up to life in prison without parole. According to facts laid out in court for Judge Adam Dill, police obtained video that showed Mr. Kelly, 23, had backed into a space in the parking lot of Star Fox Food and Liquor at 1005 Bloomington Road shortly after 10 p.m. that Saturday. Minutes later, a second car with two women inside pulled in and Mr. Kelly was outside his car talking to them. A minute later, he walked back to his car and opened the door. Just then, a yellow Jeep and a white Buick behind the Jeep pulled in fast. Someone got out of the rear driver's side of the Jeep and began firing at Mr. Kelly or his car. At the same time, the driver of the Buick, later identified as Fonville, and the driver's side rear passenger got out. Fonville was seen firing a gun more than once. The Buick's passengers went into the liquor store. The wounded Mr. Kelly lunged from his car and ran northeast, falling to the ground shortly thereafter. Police found a handgun near where he had fallen. Despite having been shot, he was able to run across Bloomington Road before collapsing near the Popeyes restaurant. The Jeep and Buick then fled. A witness identified Fonville as a driver of the white Buick. Police collected 41 bullet casings from at least two different guns. Shots hit the nearby Days Inn and several vehicles that were in the Star Fox lot. 24 9mm cases were found in the area where the Jeep and Buick had been. Two others were found in the westbound lanes of Bloomington Road, and another 15 cases from a 40 caliber ammunition were collected in the liquor store parking lot. There were no casings near where Mr. Kelly parked. Mr. Kelly's was the fourth of five homicides in Champaign in 2020. Just last week, Judge Tom DeFantis sentenced Fonville to 4 years in prison for aggravated battery in a July 2, 2019 attack on fellow Champaign County Jail inmate Herbert Shaw. At the time that happened, Fonville was in jail on armed robbery and aggravated robbery charges in a June 2019 incident. Those were dismissed when he pleaded guilty in March to the attack on Shaw and because the victim had left town too fearful to testify, police said. After his guilty plea, Fonville was released on his own recognizance, but his sentencing, initially set for April, was delayed by the coronavirus pandemic. He was taken back into custody on August 19th, the day of sentencing, just 4 days after Mr. Kelly's fatal shooting. Detectives approached him to discuss the shooting after his sentencing hearing, but Fonville declined to speak to them. He remains in the county jail awaiting transfer to the Department of Corrections. At his sentencing, Assistant State's Attorney Victoria Dedman entered aggravating evidence from Champaign police of other violent crimes for which Fonville had either been charged or to which he had been linked. Hearing the facts Thursday of Mr. Kelly's fatal shooting and that Fonville had prior adult convictions for vehicular hijacking, residential burglary, and aggravated battery, and a juvenile adjudication for aggravated battery, Dill set his bond at $1 million. Bonneville asked the judge to continue his case for 2 weeks so that he could hire his own attorney. He's due back in court on September 11th. Okay, there's a picture here on the front page of the county section. And underneath the picture, it says, Paul Schur, a painter with University of Illinois Facilities and Services, on Thursday preps one of the 140 circles to be used for calisthenics by U of I ROTC cadets at Lot 31 near Memorial Stadium in Champaign. And this little blurb is by Jim Rossow. There will be activity in Lot 31 to the west of Memorial Stadium this fall, just not tailgating enjoying Big Ten football. Starting this morning, about 115 University of Illinois ROTC cadets will use the grassy expanse for intense, socially distanced workouts. On Thursday, U of I facilities and service painters were finalizing a setup that includes 140 circles for individual calisthenics as well as 10 running lanes for sprints. Ongoing construction of the nearby Seibel Centers for Design knocked the ROTC crew from its usual training area. But the U of I offered Lot 31 quiet due to the football season being pushed to spring as Plan B. It's a win for us, said Eric Ashworth, the ROTC Scholarships and Enrollment Officer. We're thankful the university made it available to us. We'll use it until they need it again. The cadets will train there Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings. And we have what? Top of the Morning by Bob Asmussen. On Thursday morning, during WDWS 1400 AM's Penny for Your Thoughts, the station aired a public service announcement with a famous voice as the narrator. Tom Baudette of Motel 6 fame will leave the light out for you. Taped a 30-second spot for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. In it, he urged citizens to wear masks, and pants. The commercial was the brainchild of Health District Administrator Julie Pride, who has been front and center with the community's response to COVID-19. Pride called WDWS, WHMS, WKIO General Manager Mike Hale and asked if he would run the spots without charge. The answer, of course, was yes. I told her what a cool idea, Hale said. Tom Baudette did it out of the goodness of his heart. Pride had to jump through plenty of hoops to get the spot cleared. A bonus, as Pride pointed out to Hale, Baudette is a Champaign native. I didn't know it either, Hale said. Hale said the Baudette PSA will air on WHMS and WKIO too. Here's my whole thing. It's real simple. Be smart. Be courteous. Have a positive attitude. Show some gratitude, Hale said. If we can all do that, we'll get through this. And see, what do we have in history? In 1920, the first competitive tractor contest of the Champaign County Tractor Dealers held at the Frank Starney Farm north of Champaign attracted about 5,000 people. It was held under the auspices of the Champaign County Farm Bureau. And in 1970, Governor Richard Ogilvie was to dedicate a 7-mile stretch of Interstate 74 between Kickapoo and Brimfield the next week. The opening of the stretch meant that the interstate would be fully open from Rock Island to Bloomington Normal. A 30-mile stretch of I-74 between Champaign and Bloomington was slated to open in 1971. Nationwide, on August 28, 1963, more than 200,000 people listened as the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech in front of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. And in 1917, 10 suffragettes demanding that President Woodrow Wilson support a constitutional amendment guaranteeing women the right to vote were arrested as they picketed outside the White House. And we'll take a short break now, and I will continue with the second half, and I'm reading from the News Gazette on Friday, August 28th.